You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Wednesday, May 9th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. Today on the program, bye-bye, Luger. 36 years in the Senate. Bye-bye. Meanwhile, in North Carolina, a huge victory for hatred of people because of their sexual orientation. And a big step in the direction of North Carolina of making gay people well entrenched as second, maybe third class citizens. You should be very proud of yourself, North Carolina. Meanwhile, in Wisconsin, are we one step closer to recalling Scott Walker in a month? Or is this going to be an uphill climb? We will talk to our guy in Wisconsin, Josh Orton, in just moments to update us on that. And interesting dynamic between the notion of our terror threats and our killing of civilians. All that and more, and my cold today on the Majority Report. Before we go to Josh Orton, ladies and gentlemen, the other day we talked about how Nancy Pelosi has come out for Simpson Bowles. That letter written by those two old opponents of Social Security, which would call for a raft of new revenues in terms of taxes, but also deep cuts into Social Security. And I think Cliff and I discussed this on Friday, also talked about Progressives United, Russ Feingold's organization, coming out and slamming Representative Pelosi for ostensibly signing on to cuts in Social Security. Well, listener Shade, from Fargo, writes, I heard you talking about Nancy Pelosi's huge sellout by backing the Simpson-Bowles plan, but I think you have it wrong. Her endorsement is the kiss of death as far as any Republican representative is concerned. They'll vote against her beliefs as long as they aren't on her side and other Democrats. Republicans look like they can, they're going against her by voting against it. She knows this garbage won't pass the Senate. It's just more political judo. Love your show, Sam. Interesting theory, and we'll ask Josh Orton about it in a moment, but there may be some truth to it. But be that as it may, it still essentially moves the center of the debate, or I guess the left margin, theoretically, of the debate, firmly entrenched on the side of cutting the most successful program this country has probably ever developed. I mean, it keeps two-thirds of our elderly out of poverty. It cannot, by law, contribute a dollar to the deficit. It is the only thing that we can count on over the next 20-some-odd years. And even with projections of incredibly anemic growth in this country. Growth that if those projections come true, understand is essentially a long-term recession, a long-term mild depression. Even on those very stark projections, it will still pay out slightly over 75% of the benefits promised today. 22 years out, it will start, as opposed to 100% prior to that time. And even under 75% of those projections, it would still be more than it's paying today because the cost of living increases. And this is with the full knowledge that we are taking in terms of revenue, statistically about 7% less than traditionally because of the tremendous amount of income disparity in this country. So to concede this point, even if it's done for some type of political expediency, I'm not sure of the value of that. But we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Josh Orton, who is in, I believe, Madison, Wisconsin, as we speak. And we'll get the real deal on these numbers out of Wisconsin. We know who won the Democratic nomination. But what you may not know is that Scott Walker, running unopposed in his primary, garnered more votes than almost all the Democratic nominees combined. That is not necessarily a very good sign. We'll see how bad it is in just a moment. Well, I'll make you lose your mind. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome back to the show. And I don't mean just back to the show as someone who we talk to on occasion, but also as being a producer emeritus of this program. Of course, I'm referring to Josh Orton. Hello, Josh.
Hi, Sam. It's good to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back, Josh. How's the weather in Madison?
It's a little overcast. Not great.
Yes, and that sounds almost like the results from yesterday, doesn't it? all right, first off, let's talk about on the Democratic side. Tom Barrett, correct?
Yeah, Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee won a pretty decisive victory in the primary yesterday. Looks like it was just about 24 points, percentage points over Kathleen Falk, who's the former Dane County executive. Dane County is the county where Madison is in the middle of the state. It was a very decisive win. It reflected, I think, there was a poll released by the Marquette Law School sort of in the last week of the election that showed Barrett up 16 points. But once they pressed leaners, in other words, once they forced people to get off the fence who were undecided and make a decision, Barrett was about at 23 or 24. So, it reflects basically what the last poll said it would pan out at once people who were undecided made a decision.
Now, Falk was more the choice of labor, and she was in this almost from the beginning. When the recall petitions were filed, Barrett jumped in late. Barrett has lost a race for governor, I believe, twice. Am I right? And Falk herself, not necessarily a great candidate. She lost multiple statewide elections.
Yeah, I mean, they both sort of – I mean, Mayor Barrett's argument, which I think, you know, obviously some folks found convincing, was that when the last time he ran against Scott Walker in 2010, he ran into the Tea Party buzzsaw, is his language. And, you know, I think that there's some legitimacy to that. And that was a wave election. And you know, you're right that a lot of the statewide unions backed Falk early, and I think that she deserves a tremendous amount of credit for, you know, being instrumental in building the movement to recall Walker early. She was up around the Capitol quite a bit last year, and she traveled the state and really helped sort of ignite the fire that you know, resulted in just about a million signatures to recall Walker. But, you know, I think everybody, you know, I think the notion that this was a real divisive primary was sort of overblown. Falk was very gracious in her concession, immediately endorsed Barrett, said that we needed to unite to defeat Walker. And you saw the same statewide unions that had endorsed Falk immediately support Barrett and say that he's, you know, gonna be good to, we'll stand up for workers' rights. So I think that there's going to be, there's going to be pretty clear unity going forward.
Now Barrett, you know, he may have gone through a faced the Tea Party buzzsaw in
2010, yeah.
2010, but he's going to face a buzzsaw of cash, isn't he? I mean, Walker has already outraised him 25-1. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Well, there's a couple sort of quirks to Wisconsin law that help explain a little bit of this, and it's
and there's also the little quirk about Scott Walker. You know, he's got the Koch brothers.
And yes,
they just pick up the hotline and.
Yes, there's also the quirk of Scott Walker being in the pocket of corporate America. But there's sort of a quirk in state law that allowed him for the sort of pre-recall period to basically raise unlimited money, and he did that. And while he can't, you know, he had to sort of spend it pretty quickly, and that's why you saw him raise and spend so much so quickly. But it's also smart because, you know, while technically he can only use that money in the primary period, you know, the infrastructure that it allows him to build, both fundraising-wise, you know, email-wise, you know, it's still going to benefit him in the general election. You know, he's really built up a national fundraising base. You know, he traveled the country in this period raising money. So it's going to be a real uphill battle, both because of the money that Walker's able to raise, but also the opinions of this thing have really sort of hardened. You know, if you look at the polls, you know, the sort of good news for Walker is that he's basically got a floor of support at about 47%. You know, he vacillates between basically 47 and the bad news being his ceiling is about 51%. And, you know, it's people are pretty dialed into this thing. So it's really going to, you know, and I think that Tom Barrett's a great choice. I think he's, you know, he's really fired up, and I think he's going to be able to fundraise from the grassroots. But it's going to be a lot of it's going to come out to being able to turn out because, you know, as you mentioned, you know, before I got on, Walker got a tremendous amount of votes yesterday. You know, he basically faced
626,538. That is more than Barrett and Falk combined. And almost as many as were cast for all four. Was it four candidates on the Democratic side?
Yeah, four legitimate candidates and one fake. I mean, you know, if I wanted to be tremendously optimistic, I would add together the four real true Democrat, the vote totals for the four true Democrats, plus the number of votes cast for the sort of – there was a sort of fake Republican running against Walker who was basically a 23 or 24-year-old protester. And he – you know, and to his credit, he sort of made this, you know, challenge against Walker into basically performance art and making a point about who's the true Republican. And he had sort of some sort of tongue-in-cheek commercials. If you added his vote totals, the total votes cast for sort of the – progressives was about 685,000, and Walker and the fake Republican were 631. But, you know, you saw Democratic campaigns running get out the vote efforts. And, you know, really the only get out the vote efforts that Scott Walker enjoyed yesterday was conservative talk radio. And that both says that conservative talk radio in Wisconsin is actually quite powerful. That it's sort of a force, but also that this is sort of, you know, that Walker has sort of turnout room to grow here, that it's, you know, he's going to really turn out a lot of conservative Republicans.
Wow. And so this thing is very much up in the air.
Yeah, I think it's going to be razor thin margins. I think it's going to be very close. I think there's going to be a lot of money from outside groups.
Am I going to have to come back out there, Josh, or what?
I think it's going to be exciting. You know, I think it's going to be sort of – it's certainly going to be the center of the political universe for a few weeks. This thing happens really fast.
Now, when is this? This is in June, right? I mean, it's June, the first week of June?
June 5th. It's about – it's less than a month away.
Wow.
You know, there's basically 4 weeks of campaigning here, and it's all going to converge in
– Now, let me ask you a question. Walker has raised, if my understanding, somewhere around $25 million. He's had to spend almost all of that. Barrett raised $1 million. Yeah. How much is Walker going to raise between now and 4 weeks from now?
I mean, I couldn't estimate, but I think he's going to raise a lot of money. And I think that the other thing is that, you know, there's going to be these same outside groups that supported him the last time. You know, these groups that, because of Citizens United, are able to raise unlimited amounts of money and spend it on TV commercials, either supporting Walker or attacking Barrett. You know, the amount of money that Walker's going to raise specifically for his campaign, combined with the amount of money that's going to be spent by outside groups, is just, it's certainly going to be the most expensive election that Wisconsin's ever seen.
Wow. Well, this is going to be, this is such a huge bellwether for so many different things, both in terms of how much corporate money is going to influence our elections coming, you know, going forward. It's going to provide the template. You know, if Scott Walker survives, it basically is a green light. Although I don't know if it's possible to give a red light to these movement conservative people, but it is a brighter shade of green light, I guess, to go ahead and provide and destroy collective bargaining.
Well, and I think it was also clear from the beginning that Walker was basically implementing what was a national corporate agenda.
Right.
You see it with Kasich in Ohio. Walker, you know, there were a couple other states where governors were considering this. Christie obviously is big into the, you know, Chris Christie from New Jersey was just here a week or two ago supporting Walker. You know, there's a national movement about this as you implied, and you know, I think that I agree with you that it would help sort of, if not slam, then at least tap the brakes on this for other governors nationwide. But if Walker were to lose, I think it's sort of a clear indication that, you know, in this post-Citizens United environment, that this money can just sort of attack workers' rights and, you know,
right.
social programs all across the country.
If Walker wins, you mean?
If Walker wins, that's right.
All right, so let me ask you just one other side question, because you work for Progressives United, as you know, which is Russ.
I do know that, yes.
Yes, Russ Feingold's organization. And so you're aware that last week your organization came out and basically told Nancy Pelosi or asked Nancy Pelosi, what are you doing in terms of Simpson Bowles? I just read an email from a listener at the top of the show, saying that she knows what she's doing. She knows if she comes out in favor of that plan, Republicans can never vote for it, and therefore it's dead on arrival. What about that calculation? Does that make sense to you, or is that helpful? Even if that's true.
Well, I think we're sort of operating from the, you know, I just want to say generally we're operating from the principle that, look, Leader Pelosi has been great on this stuff for years.
That's what was so shocking about it.
A true progressive hero, and you know, she's great. This is a very specific question about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid cuts, and, you know, that are in the Simpson-Bowles plan. And, you know, I think what we've seen in the past, and, you know, man, we can go back to 2005, you know, when we were talking about how, you know, fighting how Democrats were talking about Social Security, is that, you know, there's some, you know, sure, there might be a sort of a political strategy to try and box Republicans in on this. But I think the larger point is that, you know, it sort of harms the sort of stability of these programs in the long term and makes it easier for Democrats to to say the wrong thing on this when we're not clear on taking benefit cuts off the table. And I think it's sort of a bedrock progressive value. And, you know, it's a fairly straightforward question. And, you know, her leadership on this in the past has been great. And so, you know, we just wanted to make sure that there wasn't sort of wiggle room on this. And, you know, I think that's the question that we presented, and you know, it hasn't been answered yet. But you know, it's pretty specific. This is not about sort of the programs generally or Republican attacks. This is about whether or not Democrats will sort of stand up to the very simple progressive principle that I think benefits every Democrat running to be able to say, no, I don't support cuts to these these program benefits. I think that's a smart political move. I think it's a smart policy move. You know, it's pretty fundamental.
I mean, but is there any political gain by making Simpson-Bowles radioactive for Republicans? Because it seems to me that just moves the supposedly the compromise point to the right. I mean, doesn't it? You know, the idea that either they're going to accept the revenue generating aspects, the tax raises in Simpson-Bowles, or they're not. They're not going to say, like, we'll accept it, even though Nancy Pelosi hasn't, has signed on to it or not. I mean, it just seems to me it's a short-sighted perspective, if that is actually the case.
Yeah, it's sort of I mean, you have to sort of assume that there's some calculation to this, but you know, who knows? You know, I think it's pretty easy. You know, I think this can sort of, the question can easily be answered pretty quickly, and we hope it is.
I'm not sure what that means, Josh, but we've run out of time. Josh and I sometimes we talk this way, and we know what each other are saying because we've worked together for so long. But I know that the rest of you don't understand what that means. But yes, we can't know what's in her mind. And I guess the best case going forward is basically say, don't in any way accept even the premise of cuts to these benefits being appropriate, because frankly, they're not.
Sure, and look, in an election year, I think it's also important for, you know, progressives who want to run for Congress, you know, anybody who's sort of, you know, we want them to be able to stand with their own party and say, no, I oppose these cuts. And we also want to close the door on, look, anything down the road in a lame duck session. We don't want to, like you said, we don't want to sort of move the policy window to the right on these programs. It's just, it goes down a bad road, and, you know, I think we want to sort of stick to the, you know, it's a fairly bedrock progressive value that the benefits from these programs shouldn't be cut.
All right, Josh. Well, why don't you go out there and start whipping up the vote for Tom Barrett right now?
Yeah, I'll go start knocking on doors.
Okay. All right. Josh Orton, everybody, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, folks, we're going to take a brief break. I'm going to take just like a 5-10 minute nap and trying to regain my strength here. Got a cold. Flying solo these days because the better half is traveling for work, so I'm stuck with a little terror. Of course, I'm referring to my daughter, and we're having our arguments about why it's inappropriate for her to wake me up in the middle of the night multiple times. She's not getting any juice today. Let's give you an update on how I have struck back. Why am I taking things from her? Because she's taking things from me. Sleep. That's why. So, I'll just let you know, Barbie is in a special place right now, and Barbie's not coming back for a while. But I will be back in just a moment. Should I stay or should I go now? We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. As you can tell, I've had this opportunity to be refreshed. I'm sweating like I'm going through menopause right now. I'm reasonably sure I'm not, but it's possible, I suppose. Meanwhile, North Carolina wants you to know loud and clear that that is a state. And I have friends in North Carolina. I have some very good friends, relatives, good friends. But apparently they're surrounded by douchebags. With all due respect to North Carolina, and as far as I can tell, you got great truck stops down there. I stopped on one of the places on Route 95. I think south of the borders in South Carolina. But as far as I remember, there's a whole lot of really funny road signs on Route 95 as you're getting close to south of the border, and that's enjoyable. And, of course, it's the home of the Democratic National Convention. Not sure if I'm going to go. I might. I probably have to, but Amendment 1 to the Constitution prohibits the state validation or recognition of domestic legal unions unless it is a marriage between a man or a woman. Understand that there was already statutes in North Carolina that made gay marriage, marriage between single-sex couples, illegal. However, domestic rights were recognized in many instances by corporations there, by companies, adoption rights. These include rights to health care for domestic partners and for children of domestic partners. There were rights such as protections if your domestic partner is beating you. And so when North Carolinians talk about the sanctity of marriage, whatever that means, relative to the fact that somehow your marriage is desanctified if a man marries a man or a woman marries a woman, they are full of crap. What this does is basically strips away rights, further strips away rights from gay people. The provisions passed pretty handily. They were, this came, of course, this ban came up. This constitutional ban came up because Republicans took over the state legislature in North Carolina for the first time in 2010 in over, 140 years. All 11 states, I think, in the union, the Confederacy, now have constitutional bans. I believe there are 30 to 31 states in the country that ban gay marriage. I think the Constitution has only been amended in those southern states. It's a real shame, and while I think there's a good argument that we're going to see progress towards full citizenship for gay people in this country, you know, Supreme Court, certainly not amenable. And national Republicans, certainly not amenable. North Carolina has a pretty big, that research triangle there, I mean, there's a reason why they call it research triangle, because it's a triangle and there's a lot of research that happens there. And, of course, the amendment failed by, I think, a 4-1 margin in that area. I imagine you'll see something of a brain drain slightly. It really is stunning, and hopefully we won't, this will be the last of it. Dinosaur wags its tail 20 minutes after its head's been chopped off. At least that's what they tell me. And so hopefully that what we're seeing here is the sort of the last vestige of these bigots. There are reports that President Obama is going to be on ABC television today. The Twitters are all a tweet. implying that President Obama may announce his fully evolvitude on the issue of same-sex marriage. I wouldn't count on it. Highly unlikely that that's going to happen before the election. But nevertheless, hope springs eternal. Meanwhile, rounding out the more prominent results of yesterday's elections and voting across the country, Senator Richard Lugar, 36 years in the Senate, unseated. Well, he's not unseated yet, but he's been unseated as insofar as he is no longer the Republican nominee for that position come November. He was beaten, I think, relatively handily by a Tea Party type guy, Murdrock. I don't know. You can imagine that this guy is a nut job. Now, some people are arguing that this is really a function of the Tea Party. Li Fong over at the Republic Report also adds into the mix that Dick Lugar is being used as an example by the banking industry. You'll remember that whole swipe fees battle, which was essentially, it was basically two different huge industry interests going head to head. And the question, who was going to win, big retail or big banking? And in that instance, it ended up being big retail winning out, reducing swipe fees. And supposedly the Financial Services Roundtable, Scott Talbot, Lisa Nelson of Visa, Peter Blockland of the America's Banking Association, and others hosted an Inside the Beltway fundraiser for Lugar's opponent, Richard Murdoch, over the past couple of months, just as a way of saying, we're going to come and get you, Lugar. But, Lugar is a dinosaur. He is a hard right conservative who would occasionally not be a total D-bag. And because of that, because at times he had worked with people like Kennedy and President Obama, and because he wasn't completely insane when it came to foreign policy, he had to go. I don't know if Indiana is up for grabs now, may give a Democrat slightly more of a chance. We'll see how insane this nominee is, but it was expected, and now it's happened. And finally, in the Senate, we're going to do a short. Oh, you're kidding. I just saw this. According to Slate, Delta Airlines pulls ads from The Daily Show after conservative complaints. The Catholic League. I've mentioned the Catholic League multiple times before, right? It's that one guy. I can't remember his name right now. You hear about him all the time. He goes on. He's sort of like a plump man who sort of talks like this. I don't know if he's from Massachusetts or New York, but he definitely has that type of accent. And he literally sits in an office. I don't know how big it is. It's just him and a secretary, and he just waits till somebody says something offensive and goes out and tries to fundraise off it. It's a great, great gig. Like, I've actually contemplated you know, how much money, like with some even remotely entrepreneurial sense, could just go out and form some type of organization that could reasonably get offended at things and has enough of a, you'd have to be a conservative, because only conservatives have this mentality that somehow, you know, this Masada mentality. Are you looking up that guy? What's that guy's name? William Donahue, I think it is. The Catholic League. Just Google Catholic League head. William Donahue. See him Wikipedia where he's born. Because I think it's got to have been Massachusetts. So I'm not sure what it would be.
No, Manhattan.
All right, Manhattan. That makes sense. Sometimes the Catholics in Massachusetts and Manhattan, the Catholics born in Manhattan sound like a Catholic born in Massachusetts who hasn't been there for a long time. That's basically it. Maybe that's what, and I'm sure right now, if he had heard that comment, he would be trying to fundraise off this with Catholics from Manhattan. So maybe I got to come up with something like that. That would be the way to raise money for this show. Instead of asking people to become members and have them ignore me. Majority.fm. We had one or two people yesterday. Could certainly use more support. You can become a member at majority.fm. It's the only thing that keeps the show alive. It's the only thing. Left Wing just doesn't fund their stuff. I tuned into an unnamed right-wing blog talk radio that I know they had announced that they got funding from, and these guys are out of Texas, I think. They got funding from the Florida Americans of Freedom, Americans for Prosperity group. I don't know why. They're funded by an organization. I listened to that show for 5 minutes, because I just saw it on Twitter, and I'm like, I wonder what that thing sounds like. It sounds like, first of all, it sounds horrible. Second of all, they run their intro, and then you just hear people talking in the background, like, I don't know what's going on. And then you hear a phone ring. It's garbage. It's garbage. But they get funding by right-wing organizations. I suppose it's conceivable I could get funding from somebody, although I doubt it. I piss off a lot of people. And so I need to rely on listeners. So that's that. Republicans, meanwhile, block a Senate proposal to keep student loan rates low. We're talking about the Stafford loans. These are government-issued loans. It is a for-profit program. Do you understand what I just said? The government makes money off of this. The question is, will they make 6.8% interest or 3.4% interest? It was dropped to 3.4% in 2007 due to jump up to 6.8% in 1 month, 1.5 months, July 1st, I believe. For some reason, we need to offset the $6 billion that it would cost to maintain this low interest rate. Republicans want to do that by cutting into preventive health care programs, such as reducing obesity, such as mammograms for poor people, on and on and on. Programs that end up saving us money anyways. Democrats want to do it by closing a tax loophole that allows profits from S-corps to escape certain taxes for people who, as a couple, make over $250,000, as an individual, make over $200,000. I don't think loans are the best way to subsidize education. But they're the only way that we can do it in this day and age. Or close to being able to do it. we should be providing extremely low cost, if not free, college education to individuals. They have should have access to it in every state in the country. But because of cutbacks, we're seeing state universities become more and more expensive. And so we're stuck with basically more of the same. Put in a parasitic entity. Pay off somebody before we can do anything good for the people in this country. In other words, we need to have a loan program which is ultimately subsidized by private lenders, predatory lenders, rather than just take the money that we spend on loans and provide a free education. Instead of just Pell Grants, we could just provide free education. Not do it in the form of just go directly to the source. Fund the universities. But we don't in this country. And it's not simply because we disagree on the best mechanism in which to make sure that we get the most amount of people who have the most amount of opportunity to receive higher education. It's because there's a huge portion of the population, or at least a large portion of one political party, that doesn't even agree on that objective. And people ignore that, at least people that I run into. All right, we're going to take a break and head into the better half of the program. We're going to talk about this supposed terror plot, alleged terror plot, that apparently was going to be carried out by a double agent that preceded a drone strike again, or at least the revelations that this plot took place. And Glenn Greenwald has a great piece about juxtaposing the coverage of this potential plot that could have taken down an airline, presumably killed a couple hundred people. This is all hypothetical and possible. The hysterics that were involved in that versus the complete lack of coverage that we end up killing hundreds of people any given month, innocent people, with drone strikes or attacks in Afghanistan, maybe in Yemen, and nobody gives a crap. It'll be a nice conversation to have on a day when I have such a cold. You can support this program by becoming a member at Majority.fm, by buying coffee from Just Coffee. It's fair trade. It's organic. It's a co-op. It's a 3 for 3. I'm about to make it 4 for 4. You get 10% off with the coupon code Majority. I don't understand, of all the things that you can do to support this program, I know that we have a lot of coffee drinkers. It's great coffee. You get 10% off, it's going to be cheaper than the coffee you buy at the store. But this is actually going to a good, and it gets delivered right to your door. I don't understand you. Yeah, I don't understand you. Maybe we need to sit down and talk so that you can explain you to me. Of course, you can also buy our merch. Give us a review on iTunes. Tomorrow, we're going to have a great show for you. I'm not sure I'm going to be here. So I feel like crap. And I give, and I give, and I give. Well, you know the whole lesson. All right, folks, you can call me at 646-257-3920 in the better half. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can Skype us at Majority Live. See you tomorrow or in just a moment.